Singapore, Archipelagic Drift. Directed and produced by Zachary Chan and Rosemini Buong.
I remember I was advertising it, like I was saying we will visit these isolated communities on remote islands. And then we went to these so-called isolated communities and we realized that they are not isolated at all. First of all, they are all connected among themselves, but I think around 9/11, gradually things got more and more closed. But in the past, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 years ago, people would actually, the fishermen would actually bring their fish to Singapore market, to Pasir Panjang. And now they can't anymore, but they are conscious also that the best fish goes to Singapore, they know the prices. So they're actually very connected, very savvy. And me and my students from Singapore, who are supposedly so connected to the outside world, realize how totally isolated we are, and we are living in this, in this bubble of Singapore. Yeah, when you talk about how we don't see the sea, it's also, I think, just the attitude. And like when you talk about Indonesia or Malaysia, it's always a little bit scary and outside. Yeah, this is a kind of nice bubble of comfort and greenery. It's also interesting how you get to Batam Bintan, there's so much destroyed land outside. I think outside every garden, if you have a wall, you know, it has to be like balanced by the equivalent amount of destruction, right? So all the green and wealth and all these things here are in a way balanced by wasteland around. Yeah.
In Singapore, one sometimes feels as though one is living in a landlocked country. The rhythm of daily life unfolds predictably. Wake, board the MRT, go to work, pass through the mall, return home. Despite being an island nation, one small fragment of a vast archipelago, there is little sense of the sea or the neighboring islands that surround us. Paradoxically, Singapore is aligned with the global north. Its economic power and infrastructural polish setting it apart from the region, even as our prosperity depends deeply on the labor, land, and resources of our neighbors. It can seem as though everything to be had exists within these contained borders. And so our gaze turns inwards towards the city's bright center, circling endlessly without ever reaching an edge.
You want to start?
Do you want to start?
I don't know what to say. I'm Precious, and I'm a lecturer at Singapore University of Social Sciences, SUSS. I teach a course on effective communication through storytelling. But my background is actually in philosophy and Southeast Asian studies. Is that enough? Yeah. We're working on Jogja. He's working on walls. And I'm working actually on rivers. And what is interesting is this word in Javanese, it's nrimo, which is kind of, you know, basically menerima, you know, just kind of receive or accept your fate. Because it can actually be a negative term. We were seeing how, for example, you know, recently the Sultan in Yogyakarta, they're kind of gentrifying the city. And at the same time, you know, they're building on this cosmological axis and displacing people who have lived within the Kraton for many decades, yeah. And what's interesting is that because they feel that they're on Sultan ground, they feel that the Sultan has the right to kind of evict them at any time. Yeah, so it's commonly seen as a kind of nrimo. Like, you know, you just accept, even if your family has been staying there for decades, you know, so you just leave. But I was kind of interested in the idea because I was wondering if it was just that simple, you know that kind of concept, if it was just accepting and there was nothing more to it. But I was looking at the people who are living in Kalechode, and basically the water for them is accepting all the garbage, you know, that's being dumped into it. There is this kind of acceptance, you know.
But wasn't there this Islamic teacher, you know, in Kali Opak? And he actually talked about river accepting, you know, everything, accepting all the water, but also garbage. Yeah, so they kind of, is it theorizing or kind of using as a metaphor for this kind of acceptance? And we kind of missed the place where we can go, be a little bit like closer. She always talks about soil. She's always missing soil in Singapore. Because she grew up unlike me. She grew up in a house with a garden. And so we wanted to be somewhere with soil and maybe a little bit of a view of not just other buildings. So we found this interesting place in northeast Bintang. And it was interesting because it was kind of this resort, like basically their house with a dried grass and a few places where we could stay, surrounded by wasteland. And there was a bay. On the other side of the bay, there was a village. So we were kind of trying to swim in the sea, and we did. But it was enjoyable, and I swam a bit farther. And there was towards me floating this lunchbox, even with a spoon on top, I think. And it was kind of nice feeling. I felt like, you know, like, yeah, it's interesting. And then there were also, I think, garbage, you know, those like black garbage, garbage bags.
Black bags.
Yeah. So I was kind of swimming in between. But I think it's always when you try to kind of escape into paradise. This proverbial lunchbox is floating towards you. Yeah. You don't see it so much when you actually sail, but when you get to islands, so you get these beautiful, like super romantic islands, often like no people, and you go and you see the trash, and it's quite amazing. It was actually very interesting because you have trash, like you have like bottles from Thailand, stuff from China, like all over the world. Yeah, it's like everywhere. You can go really very far from villages. It's full of trash. Yeah, very interesting trash.
Like my name is Jan Vráze. Officially, I teach at a university. I also play music. I play with puppets. And I like the sea. Maybe because I grew up in a country which doesn't have the sea. I came first to Southeast Asia in 1991, which is when I was like 18 or 19. I flew to Biak, I think. Biak is an island of what used to be then Irian Jaya and is now West Papua. It was very hard to get to Indonesia because I was considered to be from Czechoslovak Socialist Republic, which did not exist at the time anymore, but the news hasn't reached Indonesian bureaucrats yet.
For many Singaporeans today, our parents and grandparents arrived from elsewhere, most often by the sea. Long before modern borders were drawn, the island's indigenous communities, the Orang Laut, lived with and from the ocean, moving through its current and travelling freely from island to island. Singapore is but one tiny cluster of 64 islands among the more than 25,000 that form the Malay archipelago. To think of Singapore, then, is inseparable from the sea. The island's histories, migrations, and imaginaries are shaped not only beside water, but by water itself.
Maybe I talk about my practice as a maker, and I would say that really kicked off with an event which altered my life. And this event was the death of my maternal grandmother. Growing up, my grandmother and I lived together in the same home. Prior to her death, my grandmother and I were practicing Chinese calligraphy together because I was curious to learn this craft. She had learned how to write with ink and brush from when she was a young child. So my grandmother, she was born in 1926 in Gongzhou, Canton, in the south of China. She was a child refugee when she arrived in Singapore by boat. During these 2 years, when we were practicing Chinese calligraphy together, it came about in quite an unprompted way that she started to share very deeply and in great detail her experiences from her early childhood with me. It's like she was 10 years old when the Japanese Imperial Army invaded China in 1937, which triggered the outbreak of the Second World War in the Asia Pacific. So she had to flee from her home, and she was actually sold away by her parents to her grand aunt because her parents told her that she would not be able to escape together with them. There was not enough space for her because they were taking her brother along with them. And in this kind of culture where misogyny is very much prevalent in traditional Chinese family structures, they essentially chose her brother over her. They sent her away on a boat with her grand aunt to escape from the Japanese invasion. So initially, she took a boat from Gongzhou to Hong Kong, and eventually the Japanese arrived in Hong Kong. So she was displaced once again and had to take a boat ride, this time a much longer journey, another one to Singapore. And that was a 7-day journey across the sea. Yeah, and then she passed away in 2018, which was extremely difficult for me because it prompted me to find ways to continue being with her. And at that time, I was already developing a dance practice, very much working with the body, and I started to engage with, I suppose, what later on became a choreographic method or strategy that I call being danced. And that started specifically with my grandmother. So I was inviting her to dance me. These were the beginnings of my practice as a dancer and also as an artist in the wider sense. Yeah.
Bila bapak dia pukul dia, bapak paksa dia suruh jawab, dia tak nak jawab. Bapak ingat dia diam, dia takut gini. Tidak, dia kali bapak dia pukul, dia jatuh, kata dia tertiarap, terus darah keluar. Pergi doktor baru dapat tahu itu fibroid. Alah, kesian. Itu dia pergi sekolah, dia diam, bucat muka diri. Pasal dah banyak sangat darah keluar. Urus lah. Bapak ingat dia pregnant. Dah macam 4 bulan punya tau. Dia jatuh tertiarap, terus berdarah, keluar darah, macam orang tumpah darah. Bis, kita tak nak PE. Si kawan mama cakap dia tak nak PE, pasal dia pilih juga. Tak ada PE juga, dia pilih saya banyak sangat. Saya tak pilih, kubur-kubur, marah, dah muda budak tu tau. Kaya tak puas hati, panggil mak bapak awak. Tu panggil lah mak bapak dia kan, pasal memang melampau awak. Kita tengok cik-cik lain pun tengok. Juga tak boleh bilang kan, cik Musaira pun. Alamak, mana kau ni? Tahu habis, mak bapak dia datang. Wah, dia marah mak bapak budak kau mama ni. Mak bapak dulu kan takut macam ni.
Sayono was born in Solo, Indonesia. He worked aboard a ship as a chef and later settled in Singapore where, with his wife, had a daughter named Suyatni. Here, Suyatni recalls the violences she experienced as a child, particularly in relation to the menstruating body. The lower worlds are symbolically tied to water and conception, akin to the amniotic fluid that nurtures life in the womb. The Naga, considered feminine in aspect, are phonic beings dwelling in these waters, embodying creative power, fertility, and abundance. A recurring motif across the region is the belief that land emerges from water and that a communion with the waters is essential for a state's prosperity. The last major independent kingdom of Java, the Sultanate of Mataram, is today succeeded by the courts of Jogja and Solo. It is said that these courts rose to power and flourished through an alliance with Kanjeng Ratu Kidul, the sea goddess who reigns over the Indian Ocean.
And very much in response to the situation that was unfolding during the shoot day. So I was working with these two Solonese dancers, Mika and Panji, who you would see in the film, to kind of situate these two bodies, who I also consider water bodies, you know, human bodies, living bodies as water bodies, in relation or in dialogue with this water body that is the Bengawan Solo. So, you know, with this understanding of the Bengawan Solo as this not just haunted place, but this vessel, right, that carries such spiritual significance and life, actually, spiritual life. I think I wanted to create quite a minimal choreography that was gesturing towards the river as the main actant or the main character in the film. I think I was also...
This is the voice of Sim Hui Kiam, who was born and lived in Kun Tien, also known as Pontianak, a port city and the capital of West Kalimantan. She later migrated and settled in Singapore. She recalls an incident from the period of Dutch colonial rule in Indonesia, where European soldiers in uniform were traveling by a small boat along a shallow canal near her home. On their return, one of them stood up, causing the boat to lose balance and overturn. Although the water was mostly shallow, none of the soldiers resurfaced. Efforts were made to retrieve them using hooks and poles, and one body was pulled out, already lifeless. The next day, the remaining bodies surfaced, their noses, mouths, and ears, all caked with mud.
My name is G. I'm an artist. I work mainly with dance and expanded choreographies. I work across media as well, in film, in installation. Yeah, Bendungan started, as you mentioned, on this residency I was on in Solo in January 2020. And I actually wanted to visit the sea, but then the organizers of the residency said that the sea was quite far away from Solo, and why not perhaps I go and take a look at the Bengawan Solo, which I suppose is a very, very significant body of water in the Javanese imagination. So it ended up that I was taking a walk one fine day on the banks of this river, and there was no one around this particular stretch that I was walking along, until this point where I was crossing this small dam that was constructed on the river, and I met this man who turned out to be one of the villagers who lived in the kampung near the dam. We started to chat, and in my rudimentary Bahasa, I just conveyed, you know, who I was, and asked him, "Oh, what's your name? Do you live nearby?" And he said that his name is Pak Jokowi. And yeah, he lived here by the river for many, many years, his whole life. Yeah, so he's a local. And I became very curious. I said, "Oh, actually, I'm very interested in talking to people who live near the water. Do you mind if I came back to you tomorrow at this same spot, at the same time, and we have a chat, and then if you would allow me, I would record some of our conversations?" And he agreed, but he also added that, "Oh, tomorrow at this this time," he said, "that it would rain." So I said, "Okay, if it rains, then we would go and seek shelter in the kampung." So I came back the next day with this good friend of mine, Mika, and we waited for him. He didn't show. It was a sunny day, and I told Mika, "Okay, let's just wait a little bit more. You know, if he doesn't show up, that's fine, we'll just leave. But let's see, I'll give it 5 minutes. So we waited, and within those 5 minutes, the sky became overcast and clouds just gathered very quickly and it started to rain very, very heavily. So we ran into the village and we sought shelter in this random house, the first house that we saw. And there was this guy who presumably was the person living in that house, and he was like, oh, just come in. So we went in and I asked him like, Pak, do you know this person who lives here in this village? His name is Pak Jokowi. And the guy was like, no, there's no such person here. Are you sure that's the right name? And he asked me to describe this person, and I did. I said that, he's like this tall, he was wearing a red shirt, describing his face. And then this Pak, turns out his name was Pak Ketu, he told me that there's no such person here. And that actually he recognizes me because he saw me the day before walking along the river. He was seated on the front porch of his home. And I said, so you saw me already yesterday? And he said, yes. And as I was observing you, it felt to me that there was something that was not right. And it gave me this sense that you were about to kill yourself. And I asked him to elaborate, like, what did he mean? Then he told me that, there are many spirits that live here along the river, not just the Bagawa Solo, but actually along all rivers. And this is the belief. He added later that he had this sense that I was being followed. He then went on to tell me, you know, more stories about, since that dam was constructed, there have been many more incidents where people have been played tricks on by the river spirits.
Across voices, memories and cosmologies, water appears not as a backdrop, but as an agent, a witness, a keeper of what has been submerged and what refuses to disappear. It gathers migrations, violences, labor and longing. It holds grief, yet also renewal. Its currents refuse the borders that divide land and nation, reminding us that movement, exchange, and entanglement precede and outlast the lines we draw. If water is cyclical, what does it ask of us? What does it mean to listen to bodies of water as archives, as living presences, as kin? Perhaps the past itself moves like water, returning in altered forms. In this sense, ghosts are figures of continuity, traces that surface, recede, and surface again.
Singapore, Archipelagic Drift. Featuring Jan Mrazek, Preciosa de Hoya, G. Chan, Suyatni Sayano, Sim Hui Kiam. Directed and produced by Zachary Chan and Rosemini Buang. Produced by Norient.